It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
A mochi moment from Mark, who writes, I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
As if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown.
And hello, everybody, over at YouTube and also on our free feed. Welcome to a monthly edition of Rewind to SmackDown, where I host the show. It's a waiting takeover, and I am always joined by my partner in crime, Neil Flanagan. Welcome, Neil.
Yeah, thanks, T-Way. Do you get that one? We'll come to this maybe later in SmackDown. A nickname for Booker T that I was
T-Way
somewhat baffled by.
Okay, but there were many baffling nicknames that were uttered on this edition of SmackDown.
Indeed, there were. But yes, I'm in for John tonight because of the TNA special, I should say, not a pay-per-view. It's on TNA Plus, which is happening right now, and John, of course, is monitoring that for a solo podcast that he will be putting out this weekend.
Yes,
it's a pleasure to be with you, my captain.
Thank you so much, Neil. He's doing that. I believe Jack Wannon is also doing our live report right now on the site. So for those of you looking for TNA Victory Road live results, you can go to postwrestling.com right now, where already a bit of news has been happening. From what I understand, a new TNA Knockouts champion will be crowned by the end. Maybe by the end of this podcast, Neil, we shall see. Yeah. But just a quick look ahead. We also have, of course, Collision Course coming out with John Clonchester, who did our SmackDown report on the site, if you want to check that out. He will be co-hosting the show with Kate from Montreal over in the Post Wrestling Cafe on Saturday night. We've got John Pollock, as Neil mentioned, doing a solo TNA Victory Road report, also for Cafe members exclusively. On Sunday, Bruce and Karen reunite to talk about New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event as we are on the path towards Wrestle Kingdom. And Braden and Davey will be there from up next to talk about WWE No Mercy on Sunday. So we got you covered with everything in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Are you ready to talk about tonight's edition of SmackDown, Neil?
Ready as I'll ever be, Way.
All right. SmackDown here comes to us from the Kia Center in Orlando, Florida. This is a show attended by, according to WrestleTix, as of 6:18 this afternoon, 9,831 people. Now, this is notably down from 14,136 in the same building for a SmackDown last year. So, I mean, a bit of a significant drop, but still very high, 9,000, almost 10,000 people, I'm assuming, by showtime here. We start things off with Michael Cole and Booker T, who has returned to SmackDown here, this time without Vic Joseph. Booker joins the desk as, of course, Corey Graves is out selling an injury from Brock Lesnar's F5 attack. And Booker starts off the show giving his condolences to Corey Graves. And he almost does this in like the most sarcastic Booker T way, so much so that it completely takes the edge off of like what, Michael Cole was trying to sell very much last week and even this week as a serious injury. But he gives his condolences to Corey Graves, who will be out, Michael Cole tells us, for a couple of weeks. So I think it might mean that Booker T may be around for a couple of weeks as well.
Yes, brace yourselves. A polarizing figure, I think.
He's got his spots. He's got his great spots where I really like Booker. But more often than not, not my favorite, to say the least. But clearly they like him enough, to provide him. And I am awaiting maybe a Booker T. Stephanie Vaquer reunion at some point, maybe one of these weeks. That'd be nice. We get a recap of WrestlePalooza as we are shown to the ring by Paul Heyman, who says, we only have 2 hours to talk about this, to talk on this show. And this is where Paul Heyman does his Chris Park impression, you know, just kind of making fun of like the people in the back, making fun of, you know, them panicking about Paul Heyman possibly taking up the whole 2 hours. His impression, not nearly as good as John's Chris Park impression. Yeah. He asks Orlando, what do you want to talk about? Seth Rollins? The fans boo. They chant OTC. So Heyman brings up the OTC. He says it's just he wants to talk about the OTC, but it's disrespectful to talk about somebody who was recently stretchered out by Bronson Reed. So then he brings up Braun Breaker, but then says maybe they should talk about the conspiracy theories and the rumors regarding Brock Lesnar. Which rumors, I wonder? Not the ones that I think you and I are thinking about.
No.
Well, before he's able to break into the whole Janelle Grant lawsuit, I'm sure, Cody Rhodes interrupts. He asks Paul Heyman to tell him about Brock Lesnar. He brings up a still of Heyman doing Brock's ring introduction from Saturday and suggests that that doesn't look like a one-night thing. So he asks Heyman if he's the Oracle, the Wise Man, or if he's the Advocate. Heyman says when Brock Lesnar is around, everybody is in danger. And at this point, Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker show up to surround Cody. They don't attack Cody, but instead they come face to face with him. And Cody addresses Braun Breaker. He says he would have killed to be a Heyman guy at your age, but suggests while we don't know who Heyman is loyal to, it definitely isn't Breaker. At this point, Braun Breaker takes his shirt off, which prompts Cody to take his blazer off, and a brawl ensues with the two of them taking on Cody 2-on-1. And of course, they get the better of him until Randy Orton shows up to make the save, RKO to Bronson Reed. The faces stand tall, but of course, not before Orton grabs the championship that Cody has and hands it to him, staring at it longingly while doing so. What did you think about this opening segment?
I thought it was very strong. Start to the show with some of your bigger stars and Heyman playing off the crowd really well. You know, when they, you know, I'm sure he half expected the OTC chance, but the way he played that into putting over Bronson Reed and then straight into putting over Braun Breaker was really good. So some great talking here, and we had Cody talking about being the son of a booker. He saw Vern, he saw Bill Watts. I think he mentioned Eric, which I assume he means Bischoff. Which
not Eric Watts.
No.
Probably saw him too.
And that's where he called, that's where he uses the T-Book nickname.
Oh my.
Because he threw his watch to T-Book to look after when he took his jacket off. Yeah.
So do you think, Cody is really flexing his like marketing muscle, I would say, past weeks. How successful do you think he was at WrestlePalooza? And will he see the same success with T-Book here?
I think he just likes to use his backstage nicknames out in the ring occasionally, you know.
T-Book.
We'll see. Mm. Codeman was another one, but that's actually really Randy's. Randy likes to call
Codeman.
Cody the Codeman. But no, back on topic, a very strong opening segment that did a lot, I think, and it still gives you that little tease between Randy and Cody.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to really bring up, you know, the whole Raw and SmackDown-ness of it all, because who gives a shit? Clearly they don't, you know. It's more fun mixing and matching people. And I mean, I'll only say, if you're going to like just do this, I don't think it's worth making a big deal out of the next time somebody gets traded. You know, like who cares, right? Everybody's eligible to be on either show. But in this month, you can understand why, because this was ultimately good promotion for Cody versus Rollins at Crown Jewel, which is an inter-promotional match, with a further eye to Cody versus Brock Lesnar, of course. And then, you know, we do have the expanded mystery of whether Heyman is actually teaming with Brock permanently or if that was just a one-night thing. Of course, I feel long-term, you had a little bit of a tease of Breaker versus Cody being set up as well. And of course, maybe even in the shorter term, Cody and Randy Orton, which they seem to be fanning the flames up every time these two interact. So
we'll
see if that's something that is more immediate this time around, because obviously it would have to, well, probably mean some sort of, it doesn't have to be a heel turn for Randy. They could do another babyface match, but I mean, I feel like it would be I feel like it's time to do, turn Randy heel, don't you think?
I do, actually. And I think that Randy is a great heel. And he has said, he's on record as saying he doesn't really enjoy playing babyface. He loves being a heel. So, yeah, I think it's time.
We see the Street Profits in the back, and Montez Ford and Dawkins are asked about the tension between them. Ford doesn't want to talk about it. Dawkins says family goes at it from time to time, and they appear to be on the same page as they take on Mello Don't Miz. The winners of this match will be getting a title shot against the Wyatts. So there's certainly no tension to start between the Profits as they work well together against the Miz and Mello. They build to a Dawkins hot tag with Miz pulling Dawkins off the apron. Mello hits the first 48. He's about to go for nothing but net, but Miz tags himself in. And at this point, Mello is upset that Miz again, after assuring him that this is not the case, he's upset that the Miz is again stealing the glory for his pin. So he prevents the Miz from continuing the match by holding onto his arm. And this distraction allows Ford to hit to hot tag Dawkins, who proceeds to beat the Miz up. Anointment and from the heavens gives the Profits the win. We also see, of course, that Mello had a chance to break the cover, but chose not to. Perhaps finally breaking up these two at this point. So the Profits are on the same page as they face the Wyatts again. Mello and Miz, not so much. But the Profits versus the Wyatts is our next title match. And I think somewhat predictable, potentially, you know, in that it'll likely lead to the Profits further breaking up. But can you see them making any different of a result?
I hate to say this, but I'm not really sure whether I care at this point. I mean, this match was nothing much, and it's sort of setting up two separate streams for the Profits, will they, won't they, and kind of the same story with the other two. For me, the real annoyance of all of this is, I know in the era of five-match PLEs, they have to have programs that are for weekly TV primarily, but particularly the Miz and Mello stuff has been going on forever, it feels like, at this point. And I would have thought had reached breaking point before, and then they just sort of one week seemed to be on the same page again. So I just really hope, particularly for Carmelo Hayes's sake, that this is, you know, reaching a point where he can break away and they can do something special with him. The Profits too, I think, I don't know, they're just taking their sweet time with a breakup. It does seem to be heading that way. We shall see how long it takes.
Yeah, I really don't disagree with you in that. Like, I think in general, I would say the mid-card writing on SmackDown has been very uninspired. And that certainly goes for this entire tag division, which I would suggest was much hotter before the Wyatts came around. And not just like that, to me, is not necessarily an indictment on like the Wyatts being a poor act. I just don't think they're written very interestingly. And I don't know, every other team at this point, I mean, most of them we don't even see on screen anymore. Remember how hot Fraxium were for a few weeks? You know, like, I mean, when the division was strictly built on just like hot matches, they were in much better shape. And I don't know, something happened.
I don't think any of us are asking for 3-hour SmackDowns to come back, but the tag division was the backbone of those longer shows. Yeah. And it was the best wrestling on the shows as well. And yes, you know, but on week to week at this point, we're just really seeing one match from the division. So no DIY tonight, no Motor City Machine Guns tonight, and so on. And I agree with you, Wei, that like the way the Wyatts are written is rescuable, but they're into this sort of ChatGPT spooky thing at the moment, which doesn't interest me. I don't think it interests you either, from what I've heard you say.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Jade is in the back, and she's quickly interrupted by Stephanie Becker, who basically is on the show to talk to each of the participants of tonight's main event three-way between Jade, Naya, and Tiffany, because, of course, the winner of that match will go on to face Stephanie Becker at Crown Jewel. So Jade tells Becker that a storm will be coming your way at Crown Jewel. We get our next match, which is Meechin and B-Fab taking on Julia and Kiana James. Now, this is actually the first match we're actually getting to see Kiana James wrestle, at least on television, since her return. Because her last match, of course, was a 7-second loss to Meechin. So we didn't really get a chance to see where she was at in ring. So the faces dominate here. The heels retreat to the floor where B-Fab dives off the steps with the diving clothesline. And Julia sends Meechin over the floor before Meechin retaliates with a diving dropkick off the table. Very notable here that there is zero heat for any of this.
Yeah.
We go to commercial as the heels beat on B-Fab. Meechin tags in. She lands Eat Defeat to James, who stumbles towards her own corner as Julia makes the tag, delivers a Rivaderci, followed by a delayed Northern Lights bomb. You know, I don't know how you felt, Neil, but I actually thought the action was quite decent here. In fact, I was kind of impressed by Kiana James for having not seen her in quite a while, and B-Fab attached to that. But the match was, I think, doomed to fail from the beginning because none of these characters are over. None of the stories are really identifiable. And it really did, to me, highlight the gulf between the mid-card on SmackDown for the women and the mid-card on Raw, which is just like booming right now with star power.
Yeah, this is my overriding thought is for Julia, who, I mean, we know how great she is and what aura and presence she has. And you know, when they both came up, I had her slotted sort of in a similar position to Stephanie Vaquer. And look at the difference between where the two of them are at now. Julia should not be put into a match like this where she's in peril. She should, you know, no harm to, we love B-Fab, no harm to B-Fab or to Meechin, but she should be making really short work of either of those competitors on her own without any help. I just hate this presentation of her because I think she should be a solo threat. But I'll agree with you that Kiana James, I was interested to see, just because I hadn't seen her do anything meaningful in the ring for so long, how she would do, and she did fairly solidly. Meechin's fairly solid too, and B-Fab I think is improving also. You know, there was this assisted sort of kick to the head near the beginning of the match that looked terrible, but you're going to get spots like that. But I am in agreement with you that something that took any interest away was the fact that clearly the crowd just were not into this at all.
I don't blame the crowd. I mean, listen, the action would have had to have been really great for them to turn this crowd. And it was like, I thought it was fine, but not necessarily to the level of like a Fraxium versus, you know, DIY yeah. that they would achieve. And unfortunately, when you're talking about like characters that are just, they need screen time. And not only do they need screen time, but they need good screen time. They need good storylines. And this, it's just not been afforded to, you know, any of these four. So to just kind of throw them out in a match like this, I thought they were pretty much doomed to fail. And again, I'm not necessarily even saying like bringing over some more talent from Raw will fix things, because I think a lot of it just comes down to the writing on SmackDown. And, you know, it almost feels like Raw is so good right now that I wouldn't even want them to mess with it, that I'd rather just... Like SmackDown, unfortunately, this mid-card especially, kind of feels like it's the scraps, you know, the division. And, yeah. Yeah, that kind of
sucks. I think, honestly, way right from the beginning of this show, from the really hot opening segment with your stars, which set up an awful lot, and there's a bit of intrigue there in all sorts of directions, we just take this hard and immediate turn into sort of very short, very scripted background segments and meaningless matches for the most part, which is an indictment, I think, on like you said, the writing of this mid-card. And again, I'll just repeat myself, Julia deserves better, I think, in particular, out of all four of these women.
Well, certainly the biggest stars of that mid-card, you can argue, are Charlotte and Alexa, and they are tied up in the tag division as we go to the back right now where they were watching tonight's match. They're quickly interrupted by Zaruka. Sol Ruka and Zarya over from NXT. Of course, we are in Orlando, and that means a lot of NXT cameos on this particular show. So Sol Ruka and Zarya confront them backstage, and I don't know if Zarya has actually been on the main roster before, like in any sort of cameo prior to this. But anyway, I can at least say in one of her first main roster appearances, Zarya's first words were, "Charlexa." And Sol Ruka responds by saying, "Bliss." So, so they think it's time that Zaruka get a shot at those titles. Boy, am I sick of these tag team names.
Yeah.
Charlotte says they haven't earned it. Zarya says that's funny coming from Charlotte Flair. Alexa says they need to prove themselves and tells them to get in line, to which Charlotte says, "I'm proud of you, Alexa. I've taught you well." So, I don't know how much of an opinion you might have on these two from NXT, but I was kind of hoping that this version of Zarya would never debut on the main roster, and that this would like be kind of dead and gone. She turned heel, turned into a monster by the time she got on the main roster, because I think this Zarya thing is awful. Anyway,
it's unfortunate. Yeah, she's so physically imposing, and then you know to come in and be, you know, these ridiculous lines, and this is Exhibit A, and the kind of, you know, they're standing on their marks. Clearly, they've got their lines to deliver, which they do, and it's very ineffective. You're sort of left with nothing here. I will say, I still like Charlotte and Alexa together. I think it's a decent pairing for the two. And they do have more limited time on SmackDown than they do on Raw. So that's another factor in all of this is, where do you find time to build these stories? But this wasn't the best.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's so much there with like Alexa and Charlotte too, but I also don't think they've really expanded and capitalized on that as much as they could have. You know, like we're give us some vignettes. Like, you know, like you're trying to show us that these two have really actually become friends. That to me, directly calls for some just visuals of what they're doing outside of the ring, outside of these backstage locker room environments, you know, to really show the growth of that friendship. And there's just nothing. So it looks like Sol Ruka, Zarya, do you think this will be an NXT program, or do you think they'll make their way to SmackDown?
Unsure about that. It could go either way. I could easily see it happening on SmackDown, but I feel also, you know, the fact that they were in Orlando tonight probably just lends itself to them being around.
Mm, yeah. So you don't see a call-up for either of these two yet?
Not quite yet. Not a permanent call-up, no.
I think I agree. Crown Jewel Championship video is played just to remind us of what that whole thing is about. And then we got Drew McIntyre in the ring. He is out in a walking boot, which I don't even recall what the spot might have been that he was trying to sell.
I don't either. And I watched WrestlePalooza because I was taking notes on it. But I think, in my defense, last Saturday, it was the end of an incredibly long day of watching wrestling from the pre-show of All Out right through to the main event of WrestlePalooza. But no, I don't remember the exact spot where he is supposed to have injured his foot. And I don't think, I know you're going to get to this, that Aldis is sold on this being a true injury either.
Yeah, we're supposed to call bullshit on this one. So Drew walks out in a walking boot and says, this is the same building where he returned in 27 during TakeOver. This is also the same building where he beat Randy Orton for his second championship. And this should have been the same arena where he should have walked out for the first time in front of live fans as WWE champion, but he's not champion because of Cody. So he complains about that delayed count during the match. He complains about the ref getting in the way of him claymoring Cody through an LED screen, and he asks if the refs are working for Cody Rhodes. He calls it corruption, to which Nick Aldis comes out, tells Drew not to make any more excuses, and he calls out the walking boot not coming from his medical team. Drew then responds saying WWE's medical team sucks, and he's got his own team who I guess diagnosed him with some sort of leg injury. Nick Aldis interrupts, says Drew's accusation of corruption is insane, and he leaves. And I guess defender of the WWE's medical team, Jacob Fatu, walks out here, and he says, he grabs the mic from Drew McIntyre and says, shut up, stop bitching. Drew gets mad, says if he wasn't hurt. Jake then grabs the mic again, does his catchphrase. Drew hits him with a Glasgow kiss, to which Jacob Fatu gets really angry, responding with a super kick before pulling the walking boot off of Drew and hitting Drew in the head with it. So, you know, Drew and Fatu, to my recollection, have had no prior interactions before this. And so, I mean, this was their attempt at cooking up a little feud here between the two in a short amount of time. I thought a bit of an odd way of going about it with the whole walking boot thing, and for some reason having Jacob Fatu being so, I guess, angered at Drew's sort of offending of the WWE referee's integrity, that Jacob Fatu comes out. But the physicality I felt was strong. What did you think, Neil?
I found this bizarre, I have to say. Like you said, the Jacob Fatu character that we've come to know, I don't really see as the guy to come out and defend the honor of the WWE medical team or Ryan Tran and the rest of the refereeing staff. But in the ring, I quite enjoyed the interaction, the snatching the mic from one another, the physicality. So a very weird, but in some ways effective way to start a new feud completely out of the blue.
Yeah. So it looks like we're getting, of course, Drew versus, I think it's a good step up for Jacob Fatu, you know, feuding with a former champion, Drew McIntyre. It's an interesting one that I think makes sense when you're looking at pecking order, but I'm curious how it'll go, because Drew, I think his biggest feuds, his best feuds are talking feuds, right? You know, people who he can like go toe to toe with on the microphone. I thought that they would extend the Cody one a little bit longer, and they could still be because he just addressed him. But because Cody was away for so much of the build towards, you know, WrestlePalooza, I thought they would just do that. Instead, we're pivoting to Jacob Fatu, which I think is a big test for Fatu to see, well, can he carry a bit of a sort of like more dynamic, you know, microphone performance. We know he's great at catchphrases. We know he's great at sounding just his sort of quotables, but maybe a more cerebral, you know, feud with Drew. Is that how things are going to play out? How will Jacob Fatu fare in that instance?
I'm very interested to see how he rises to the challenge. I mean, when you see him speaking off the cuff when they still did them, way back when, at the press conferences. Mm-hmm. He had very little to say, you know, in reaction to questions from the media. And I don't know whether he was trying to stay in character or just couldn't really speak extemporaneously, or, you know, who knows? But with a little bit of help, I think this could be good. He's certainly got the character down. The way he speaks is great. I'm intrigued by this, even if it's off to a rather weird start.
And Drew, of course, has some history with the Bloodline. I mean, a lot of history with the Bloodline. I mean, Jacob Fatu was not a part of it, but it is his family. So we're curious to see how he'll address that. Stephanie Vaquer is with Tiffany Stratton backstage, and we just get a bit more generic and trash talk here from these two ahead of Crown Jewel. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling. Phoenix. Rey Fénix is with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn thanks Rey Fénix for the U.S. title match, and that's about as much Sami as Rey Fénix does on this particular show. As he's out of the tag division clearly, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it for him right now. They thank each other for last week. Mm-hmm. I think Fénix asks him, "Who do you think will answer the challenge?"
Yeah,
and Sami's like, "No, no, yeah, could be anyone."
And of course, in the background is in the shadowy figure of Shinsuke Nakamura backstage. Mm-hmm. So they're basically telling you, well, they're giving away that Nakamura and Zayn will be a match in the future. MFTs. Last week, Solo introduced us to Tangaloa. This week, he introduces us to JC Mateo. And we see photos of Jeff Cobb winning holding up ROH and New Japan Pro Wrestling Championships. Solo says he loves JC, for believing in him. He says anybody who gets out of line, JC puts them back in their place. And to my response, who? Because has JC been really that effective as a member of the MFT so far? He's just another Tangaloa. Is he not?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Anyway, so Solo says, your loyalty will be rewarded as long as you're part of my family tree. Now, we got this pretty much exact same type of video for Tangaloa last week, and therefore I was a little disappointed that I thought we were getting some sort of focus push for Tangaloa, and that's just kind of my sick mind wanting something like, I want to see what they do with Tangaloa. How can
that's a weekly Tangaloa focus.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
But it turns out this is just like him, you know, going through one by one each member of the MFTs, and therefore, sorry, Tangaloa, you're not special. JC, Mateo, you're not special either, man. So I think this group is so fucking cold without Jacob Fatu, without the championship, without the Ulafala. They are not threatening whatsoever. Obviously, we're building up to Tala Tonga, something with him next week. But I don't have much faith, man. This is just such a neutered, you know, like lower the mid card group, in my opinion, right now.
Yeah, even if Tala Tonga makes an appearance next week, I mean, people are saying, where is he? I think they're building to him as the sort of other big reveal of this group who also loves Solo. But I mean, I don't really care about that. We've seen plenty of him so far. I think that, you know, just building him up because he's the big guy of the group. I'm in agreement with you, that this MFT's incarnation is cold, and it's kind of unenthusing, and even when Tama comes back with his hyena laugh, just don't see great things for this group.
This incarnation is cold, but how long before we get the comedic version of the MFTs and they give us a Dark Order like transformation, or even like a Judgment Day transformation, where like suddenly this is our favorite comedy group in like 5 months, you know? Imagine a sitcom involving this, you know, like Tangaloa is perfect for that.
It would be more interesting. Yeah. Tanga would be the kind of slapstick guy. He's like who falls over a lot and stuff, that slips on things.
On the banana peel guy.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the slapstick guy in the comedy group.
Okay. So we got our Sami Zayn open challenge. And of course, who comes out but, being from Orlando, Javon Evans. Now, they did tease this somewhat at NXT Homecoming, where Sami Zayn did appear on that show and basically challenged Javon Evans to say, hey, like, you're going to step up and one day get one of these. Well, that one day is a week and a half from now, because Javon Evans answers the call. Sami Zayn versus Javon Evans here. A really, really cool little surprise for the Orlando crowd here. And somehow, clearly Josh Briggs anticipated this, because there he is sitting front row, ahead of, well, less than 24 hours or less than 24 hours ahead of facing Javon Evans at No Mercy tomorrow. So somebody tipped him off. Good bouncy flurry from Evans right before the break. We come back with Sammy in control as Evans breaks out with a huge plancha over the top rope. We get a giant jump up top rope Hurricanrana from Evans for a two count. Zane delivers an exploder. The Haluva, though, is intercepted. Evans then hits his double spring tornillo splash. Evans avoids another Haluva attempt. He hits the OG cutter, which gets a 2.5 kick out from Sami Zayn. At this point, the crowd is on their feet. They're chanting, "Ref, you suck." Evans misses a springboard. Sami finally connects with the Haluva kick and then hits the BT bomb, Blue Thunder bomb, for the win. What did you think about this match?
Yeah. I thought it was really good. I think there was a couple of moments at the very start that very atypically for a Sami Zayn match looked a little bit off to me. And it might have, that might be just me, but right at the very start. But really from the point where Sami helps Javon to his feet at one point and gives him a little pat. And then Javon sort of gets in some offense and response that I really enjoyed it. And you can sort of tell a lot of this is from the mind of Sami Zayn, who's renowned backstage for being very good at putting matches together. I think, just ask Kevin, I know Kevin Steen is his best friend, but he will always say Sami's an absolute genius at this sort of thing. Sami very unselfishly gave him a huge amount in this match. That 2.9 or whatever it was from the OG cutter was great. The crowd absolutely bet that this could happen for Javon. I think on that, when they reached that point, Frankenstein was really good. I really like Javon Evans. He's only 21. He's really tall. He's really athletic. And if you think about, we're not comparing in physicality, particularly height, I guess, people who are very comparable here. But if you think about Will Ospreay at 21 and before he'd really bulked up to what he is now, I think the future could be amazing for somebody like Javon Evans. He's very talented, and I think he still needs to maybe, it is still a cosmetic business, and he still needs to pack on maybe a bit of beef, there as well. But as an athlete, he's pretty amazing.
Trust me, age will pack on that beef for him. Okay, he won't have to do much in order to put those pounds. Because at 21, it's probably very difficult to put on weight. Once you hit your 30s, it becomes way easier. So, I don't disagree with you. I think in ring, he's already just at such an incredible level that enough to be spectacular. That he look at the reaction he got. Granted, it was Orlando, but I think this type of match would have gone over in any country. Any city, anywhere. Yeah. I would argue this was probably the loudest reaction that we got for one of Sami Zayn's open challenge matches. We are a few weeks removed from the Cena match, but I would at the very least say comparable to the Cena match, which is, I think, a huge accomplishment for both Sami Zayn and Javon Evans. This continues to be the highlight of SmackDown each week. And I think by design for, fans who prefer in-ring content or want some significant in-ring content like you and I, Zayn has been incredible in all of these matches, and like you very wisely highlighted, it's not just the physicality but the match construction that I'm sure we can credit him and whoever's working with him on these matches for as well. So great showing from Evans here, and we await to see if the Nakamura match can capture similar magic, because obviously these two are tied together from Nakamura's debut in NXT, but they're gonna have to do a lot of convincing to me to tell me that that match could be better than this one, or the Phoenix match.
Agreed, particularly since we've seen it, and we've seen it when they were a bit younger and slightly more athletic perhaps, as well. So
okay, so we got Nia Jax. At this point, Chelsea and Alba Fire offer her a role in the Secret Service as Slagent, because they say there's an open position right now. Of course, that role belonged to Piper Niven, and we've not really done any sort of concrete reporting about it on the site, but there was some discussion from Brian Alvarez this week talking about health issues going on with her. Nothing that we can really know enough to report on, but Alvarez did hint that it could be career threatening. So we have no idea what it is, not enough again to publish anything about it, but worth mentioning at the very least here.
Sure.
Stephanie Vaquer talks to Nia, says, basically says the same thing she told the other title challengers. Kit Wilson. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, Neil. Wilson shows up in a wheelchair. He's approaching, Damian Priest approaches him. And Wilson, of course, was thrown through a door by Damian Priest last week. Sorry, a wall. by Damian Priest last week. And he continues to build on this sort of new character of his where he calls out Priest for being the personification of toxic masculinity. He says he's about to show the strength of a real man. As he shoves him, calls him toxic, Wilson then turns around as Priest, I guess, threatens to punch back, and Wilson runs into a trash bin. Priest says, "Bitches be tripping." At this point, Aleister Black shows up, hits a black mass in a full suit, no less, which is kind of impressive. And then Black says, "They're destined to do this forever." Also, happy birthday. So happy 43rd birthday to Damian Priest. You didn't have to wrestle a match tonight. And you got to share the stage with Kit Wilson in this new toxic masculinity character. What are your thoughts, Neil?
Yeah, I despise it. It's terrible. It's obviously someone in the back's shitty anti-wokeism joke that they want to push on to Kit Wilson, who, I mean, is presented as literally zero threat to anyone at this point. So this, I don't know what this is meant to really achieve for Priest. It certainly doesn't do anything for Kit Wilson. Some people will laugh at it. Gets him on TV. You know, minutes are precious, I suppose, as they say. But like, it's far from me to be a party pooper. But it just don't even, if it's meant to be funny, I don't really. It doesn't even get a smile, never mind a laugh out of me. It's just an eye rolling session.
Yes, obviously some sort of commentary on wokeism, if you want to use that term. But one I also feel is like, it feels like that's like, it's 5 years too late, you know? Like, I just, something like a gimmick like this just doesn't even feel like it's any sort of like cutting edge thought that's being portrayed. And I don't doubt, so it can either be somebody presenting the character to Kit Wilson, or it could be Kit Wilson maybe suggesting it on his own. Either scenario doesn't really, I think, bode well for the taste of this creative staff. And Paul Levesque is at the very top of it, you know, where I it's not funny, I guess. It's not even like a sharp sort of like critique in any sort of way of like, you know, people who complain about toxic masculinity. It just feels like a really poor attempt at getting a new character on screen.
Agreed.
We shall see what it develops into, Neil. Okay, it could be the gimmick of the year by the end of it.
Who knows? Yeah, but by the end of it, though, I was absolutely on the Aleister Black thing. I was absolutely channel. Michael Cole was all of us when I think he said, "When is this thing between Black and Priest going to end?" And I was like, "Yes." So, amen. When is it going to end?
SmackDown has had a lot of these feuds that like just take place endlessly without any sort of like. Sort of like destination, and they're always like TV exclusive feuds, you know, whether it be like Andrade and Carmelo, or I'm sure there are plenty of others. It all just seems to be building to like a TV match that ultimately isn't going to solve anything, ultimately isn't going to advance one person or the other. And I don't know, I just can't say I'm excited for Priest versus Black. I think Priest has taken a huge step down since coming to SmackDown from Raw.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah.
And Black the same.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So we got our main event here. The reason why you're all listening to this review, it is Jade Cargill versus Tiffany Stratton versus Nia Jax for the Women's Championship. Of course, Tiffany Stratton was placed on concussion protocol following a moonsault in a rough landing following the moonsault a few weeks ago in her match against Jade Cargill. So unfortunately, one of her first big moves coming back from concussion protocol, she goes for a dive after a commercial. Her feet get caught on the ropes and she just bails, collapsing onto the floor with Nia, I think catching a little bit of the dive. She immediately has to get up Tiffany Stratton, only to take a fallaway slam from Jade Cargill. So already this match is, you know, showing some signs of, so showing some blemishes here and some concern here. And that was not the end here because, well, we continue on. Tiffany Stratton is working her ass off. She, to me, continues to be one of the highlights of just, I think the show and certainly the women's division on SmackDown, where she is showing great athleticism, some very clear improvement in the ring. She dives with a swanton to Nia Jax, but lands right into a super kick from Jade. Stratton then falls onto Nia for a two count. We go to our second commercial break and come back with Nia being superplexed by Jade and Stratton together. Stratton then goes for the PME. She lands on Nia, but Jade then breaks it up. Jade catches Stratton on a handspring elbow. She lands jaded, but Nia then breaks it up to a big reaction from this crowd. So then we go to the floor. Jade attempts to put Nia through a table, but Nia is too big. So Nia instead takes over, and Nia whips Jade into the steel steps. And at this point, Jade hits the steps, and she is busted open hard way. Lots of blood on the floor. Nia attempts to suplex Jade onto the steps, but Jade avoids it, picking Nia up for a fireman's carry, a Samoan drop onto the steps. And upon delivering the Samoan drop, man, Jade, this is where, like, really most of us, like, found out that her face was full of blood, because she walks right up to the camera, close up, screaming into the camera that it's her time. Just, like, you know, feral, you know, from all of the blood on her face. Ref at this point stops the match to stop the cut, like at least pauses the match to stop the cut, addresses it, and we cut to like the hard cam shot where it's wide. She runs back into the ring to communicate something to Nia Jax. Then it seems like we're going right into our finish here. At this point, Jade comes in to meet Nia, hitting Nia with the Eye of the Storm. Jade covers, and Nia shoves her off at the one count. Now, I say that with a bit of confusion, because the spot clearly was Tiffany Stratton coming in to break up that pinfall with a dropkick. Because what happens after this is Nia, remember, has the strength to shove Jade Cargill off at one, right? Meanwhile, Stratton comes in, dropkicks Jade out of the ring, goes for the cover. One, two. And referee Daphne LeSean holds up on the count, even though Tiffany Stratton still has Nia Jax covered. And again, I remind you, Nia already had the strength to kick out of Jade's move at one. Somehow, Stratton laying on top of her without any sort of additional maneuver has caused Nia to just continue to lay low. On top of this, one of the bigger botches of a referee not counting to three that we have seen in quite some time, with Daphne LeSean holding up on the two count. The crowd is just shitting on this immediately. They're booing. Everybody is confused. Clearly the participants are confused, because this was somehow supposed to be some sort of finish.
Yeah.
My suspicion is that Jade might have been supposed to pull the referee out of the ring at this point, because there, to me, is no other explanation. I cannot explain why Nia shoved Jade off at one, only to just lay down there to be pinned by Stratton endlessly. It's a mess. LeSean is just like now having to communicate a new finish to Stratton and Nia. So quickly, Stratton goes up for the PME, hits it, and that's it. But it was a big, big mess to close off this championship match on SmackDown.
Complete mess by the end, which is unfortunate, because there were some good sequences in the match. I don't want to completely shit all over it. And I had caught up with the commercials at this point, and I think it's fair to say that on the international feed, there was some good stuff in the commercial breaks as well. And I think now I was doing some good heel work. At one point, the crowd were chanting for tables, and she lifted the ring skirt and then turned around to the crowd and gave them the fingers and stuff like that. And she must have known that they were in break. Quite entertaining. But clearly they were up against the clock. And once it had other mistakes earlier in the match, it set those aside for the moment. But this finish just was a complete and total mess. And I think, obviously, I feel like, If you're one of these performers and you're getting a quick communication whispered in your ear to go to a finish, I don't envy you know, the confusion that there is in that about exactly how it should play out. But this just looked terrible because Naya is lying there for the count of three and
she laid there for like 15.
Yeah, you know? And Daphne just has to, I don't, for some reason, maybe she's getting it in her ear. No, we need the PME or I don't know. But
So think about it from Daphne. She's getting a lot of hate, I'm sure, for all of this. Daphne LeSean is. And I'm just trying to think about it in her position. Now, like most of the time we know, like, okay, WWE referees are instructed to make the pinfall as if it was a real pinfall.
Yeah.
This is a situation where a title is at stake. And you already building to Stephanie Vaquer versus Tiffany Stratton for your that was the closing shot of the show, right? Mm-hmm. So you can understand, I guess, her own confusion, her own trepidation. I just want to know exactly what had happened here with Jade Cargill, whether or not she was supposed to be the one to interrupt the fall somehow, whether it be by pulling Daphne LeSean's leg out of the ring or from coming in to interrupt. We also, though, have to keep in mind that Jade Cargill just suffered a head injury, mm-hmm. being driven into the steps and causing her to bleed that way. And just all of that confusion is amounting to something here that went completely off the rails. And I'm sure, you know, in the next few hours, we might get a fuller story, but this was terrible for live TV.
Yeah, there was a definite missing piece in that Phantom three count. It's got to be Jade. Either just breaking the pin up somehow or like you said, pulling Daphne out of the ring. But she took quite the blow to the head but to create that amount of blood. So that's all part of this as well. Unfortunate. On live TV, it was a very bad finish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, did she forget the spot? Did she get a concussion? I guess we have mm-hmm. to ask these questions, right? So a lot of just really unfortunate. One that unfortunately really exposes this upper mix of women's main eventers. I mean, here you have. I thought Jade and Tiffany had a very good match. Last time they were out together, you know, the one where that unfortunately resulted in that mood salt where, you know, that placed Stratton on concussion protocol. But I thought the match was really good, better than the match that they had on the pay-per-view. And it's just unfortunate that to follow that up, they had arguably, well, definitely the worst match of their entire feud together.
Sure.
So I think it just like, it really exposes, you ask whether or not like those with more experience, if they were in this mix, if this would have somehow been avoided, I mean, that's a question you can ask. We don't know the full story. We again don't know if somebody was actually, you know, concussed as a result of all this, but I'm sure these are the questions that I think like an upper brass might be asking. Are these guys ready? You know, are we ready to trust, well, a Jade Cargill or I guess Naya and Stratton have been proven in these situations before, but like, does this affect anybody's long-term push, I suppose, is what I'm asking.
It's a good question, Wei, because, you know, we've said it many times, you've said it many times, that WWE are normally really good. Whoever it happens to be, it's probably a collection of people who at laying out these triple threat matches. And I think they went into it knowing what was required. But in the end, it really, really badly fell apart. I don't want to like point the finger too hard at Jade because I think she's improved quite a lot lately. And for much of this match, she was doing really well. And it could easily be that she got her bell rung and was just, you know, kind of out of it, you know, and maybe she heard that the finish was going early and therefore just stayed out of the ring. But who knows? Mm-hmm, hopefully we'll find out. It's the sort of thing you really, really want to know.
It's the sort of thing we have to wait for Netflix's Unreal, for the true behind-the-scenes story of what happened here.
Definitely Abyss will talk us through it, hopefully.
Oh my God, I wish Abyss was agenting this one. I hope to God Abyss was agenting this one and that we have the video footage. Please.
That would be amazing. God. But all told, very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. And I think it's a fair point to say that the more experienced among the roster would have made a better fist of all of this.
Yeah, yeah. So that ends SmackDown. Unfortunately, I did mention, of course, Stephanie Vaquer and Tiffany Stratton having that stare down leading to Crown Jewel. unfortunately totally overshadowed by the match that took place before, but that is the match we're getting. What do you think about SmackDown overall, Neil?
I think it was marred by what happened in the end. There was too much of the mid-card sludge. And I mean the word sludge in sort of many ways. It's like it's not just word salad in some cases of promos or overly scripted stuff, but the pace at which some of these programs move, that we've talked about various of them tonight, you know, Priest and Black and so on, and Mello Don't Miz still plodding along. I think they need to get somewhere with some of these programs. So, you know, the opening segment was very good, and the Sami Zayn Javon Evans match was really good. Everything else, not great.
If you're looking for another opinion, of course, we direct you to postwrestling.com, where John Clanchester has a full recap with video clips of tonight's show. He recommends Sami Zayn versus Javon Evans as the match to watch, and I think you and I would be in agreement with that. I'd recommend watching the finish of the main event too, certainly.
Just for curiosity. And yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on a lot of your thoughts on SmackDown. SmackDown, to me, like this week at least, was the far inferior show when you're without the sort of star power of a John Cena and just a whole lot other else. There's, to me, not much of the writing to really be inspired by when you're just talking about this. And a main event that to boot that was certainly, you know, remembered for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. So those are our thoughts on SmackDown, and we go to forum.postwrestling.com in the XL edition where we get all of yours. At this point, we bid farewell to all of you guys watching on the free feed. Come back on Sunday for our review of No Mercy with our crew from Up Next. And also for those of you in the Post Wrestling Cafe, thank you for subscribing. We're going to continue the XL edition, but also Collision Course this Saturday. We've got John Pollock's TNA Victory Road Report, and also our New Japan Pro Wrestling Destruction and Kobe Report, and also access to the entire Post Wrestling Cafe archive, all for $6 a month. What's wrong with you? Okay, well, I'm gonna do your the John Pollock usual. Are you dumb? Okay,
I think they're scared.
Are you scared? That's what he does. What are you scared? PostWrestlingCafe.com, everybody. Take the challenge.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust. From paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.